Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Adam White, through to the role. He's had a great East. He's been busy peddling hard, he has. And he's with us on a Tuesday morning. Good morning, Whitey.
Good morning, Daniel. I must confess I'm all over the place this morning. I thought with daylight saving we'd be coming in here and it'd be bright and sunny. But no, it's still dark.
It's always dark, isn't it?
I thought with the early, with the clocks going back or whatever they did, that we'd be in bright sunshine this morning.
No.
That's go. Sort of October time.
It's less dark. It's just less dark.
No, it's still
it's not
dark.
Sunshine. It's less dark.
Anyway, so that was that. It's Masters Week.
It is.
Which is very, very exciting with the players already at Augusta, and we're seeing some skimming over 16, and we're seeing at least some people there from what I've seen, but bright, sunny conditions for the first day of sort of scheduled practice. So that's very exciting because I think we might have a bit of a chance this week in the Masters from an Australian perspective. So,
well, we're going to speak to Mark Leishman later on in the week.
We are.
Teed that up, which is like what I did there, teed that up.
Yes, like that.
That was very, very good by Joey to be able to get a hold of Mark Leishman. So we'll track him down a little bit later on the week, which is exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's going to be a special Masters because of clearly what had happened last year. The fact that Tiger Woods isn't there is going to be a clear setback because he can't kind of defend the April title, if you like. Dustin Johnson won in
November.
Does
the April title count?
Well, maybe not, but that was the last time that, you know, we had a Masters where it felt normal. It's not going to be normal without Tiger there. But at the same point, Jordan Spieth won on the weekend in Texas. And, you know, he's been sort of knocking on the door now for quite a while. But
I was 2 months too late.
Yes, exactly. You were sensing that he might not have been too far away. I think that him winning is exciting because he has played there so well in the past. He's won there before and been in contention a couple of other times. And there's something about Jordan Spieth, the way he plays. He sort of hits the ball all over the place but finds a way to get the ball in the hole. And I think that's going to be really interesting as well. So I'm looking forward to this week.
Ian Baker Finch going to join us as well on Thursday morning to give his tips and preview for the Masters this week. So that's exciting stuff. So good build up to one of the great golf weeks of the year on the Breakfast Club throughout the week.
Now, I want to know, you went camping.
I did.
You've come back looking a little bit like Bear Grylls with some abrasions across the head and all that sort of thing. How'd you go sleeping on the forest floor?
No. No, I did have a little setback on night one with the mattress, the air mattress, which did sort of deflate a touch. Not all the way where I was on the ground, but it was deflating a touch and I was rolling around looking, trying to find the comfy spot. I found it eventually, but night two, we were able to commandeer some stretchers from the people we went camping with who are seasoned travellers. So that was a very pleasant experience. Fantastic weekend. What a weekend with weather. What a beautiful weekend.
Fantastic weekend.
In the Grampians, it was just the most gorgeous mornings, afternoons. A bit hot in the afternoons, in fact. Had to seek shade at times. It was the most gorgeous time. And I did come off second best with a tree branch climbing Hollow Mountain. Had my bucket hat on. I couldn't see when I was climbing up what was happening above my eye line. And went straight into a branch and came across, came up second best. But as you would expect, I've found enormous courage to continue and found the hollowness of the mountain with the kids, and we had a great time. But it was good. I really enjoyed it. It was a nice way to just chill out. Not a lot of phone reception there, Whitey, so not a lot of connection to the grid. Just get off grid and just chill out. It was nice.
Very good.
It was nice. One great thing, and I know some people are having some breakfast. One of the great moments in my life, and I think if you ever are getting ahead of yourself, or think that you are bigger than the game, so to speak, just get yourself to a caravan park or a tourist park, like where we were staying, and get yourself to the camp toilet shower area.
The ablution block.
The ablution, the toilet shower area, I like to call it. The ablution block for you. Because I was sitting there brushing my teeth one morning, in one section of it, and that's the down the hall a bit is the ablution block, the toilet area, and now the cubicles were full at the time, so there was a bit happening in there. Some guy came in the morning, and he was doing his thing, standing up doing his thing, and all I heard from from down the other end where I was brushing my teeth was, "Whoa, jeez." laughed my guts out for about half an hour and have been laughing about it for 3 days since. It just, it's very raw, it's very communal,
yeah,
no. It's very intimate. And the, jeez.
Yeah.
Al Del Vecchio style was one of the funniest moments I've come across in many, many moons. God, I had a good day that day, just reminiscing in that in my mind.
No. Not for me, thank you.
Jeez.
So you've just reaffirmed why I'll never do something like that.
You've got to do that.
That experience, sleeping on a stretcher.
Stretcher was good.
No, thank you.
No, stretcher's lovely. I'm
trying to get some sleep over the Easter break. No, not for me.
Now, how was yours? Because you were right into the city with the boys.
Yeah, we got there. We got there. I was very proud of particularly my little man, James, because he was only five and he was determined to get to the city before his brother did it. So his brother did it as a seven-year-old and James did it as a five-year-old. So it was 41 kilometres and it took us 6.5 hours. But he got there.
That's courage.
Yeah, we left at 9 o'clock in the morning down the main Yarra Trail from Warrandyte and we got all the way to South Bank at 3:30. So
6.5 hours.
Yeah, so I think to me, it wasn't just the fact that James on a little 16-inch bike could get 41 kilometres. That's an achievement in itself. But to be able to have the perseverance to do it over 6.5 hours, I think, you know, to keep concentrating that long, that was what I was most proud of James. And I was also very proud of Campbell for being the big brother to keep encouraging him and be patient because he obviously wanted to go a little bit faster than that. But, yeah, we got there. So it was
six
a great achievement.
Hours. My man, Jim. What a champ.
I didn't think he'd get there. You
did.
I backed him in.
He did. He's as stubborn as anyone I've ever met, that boy.
Yeah, I know. He is. And that's what got him there. Takes after his brother and his dad, but more, mainly his dad. But no, I was really proud of him. In fact, he wasn't tired at the end because he came home, played an hour and a bit of football when he got home.
Got to freshen up.
Yeah. So
he's doing the work. He knows. It's a bit like Christmas Day when you do a training session Christmas Day. No one else is doing the session that day. So he's in front. He's got the load in now. He's got money in the bank, so to speak, for his training regime.
Gee, I was courageous though. I was, at one point, I thought they were starting to really sort of wilt. So we stopped on the banks of the Yarra and I ran up Bridge Road, just inspirationally ran because I didn't want to leave the kids down there for too long, trying to find a service station or something to get Gatorades into them and some food into them because we'd eaten our muesli bars and had our water along the way and we were low on supplies. But and we got it into them and away they went. So, no, it was great. Really, really good. Great fun. Anyone who's wanting to do that sort of thing with their kids. It's such a great thing, especially on a beautiful day as it was on Good Friday.
It was gorgeous.
To take the kids on the bike ride on the main Yarra Trail. It's a great ride.
Nice thing to do. My man Jim getting the job done. 1-300-652-927. What'd you get up to this weekend? Your take on the sporting proceedings of it. Andrew's in Sorrento. Wants to get involved. Good morning, Andrew.
Morning, Half. Morning, Whitey. Just got a quick question for you. About 20 seconds to go in one of the second quarters, I think on a Saturday night game, I heard an umpire tell a player when he questioned him that ducking isn't prior opportunity. Do you guys know if that's right or wrong?
That's a good question. I thought ducking is prior opportunity. I think that has been decided.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, Andrew. I think in that situation, it happened so quickly that it was deemed that it wasn't prior opportunity. Now, under normal circumstances, you give up prior opportunity when you choose to duck. But I think because it happened so quickly, it was almost like bracing for contact as opposed to trying to evade a tackle before getting a disposal away. So I do know what you're talking about. Just on umpires chatting to players, I was getting increasingly frustrated by Ray Chamberlain yesterday.
What did Ray get up to?
I think the way he talks to players is unacceptable.
Right.
I think the condescending way he speaks to them, the way he... It's just not... I wouldn't like it if I was a player. I just think he's got to be better than that. I think he's got to show the players a little bit more respect in the way that he speaks to them. And I think he enrages, fuels potential problems out on the ground with the way he conducts himself. And yesterday was a perfect example of that. I think Ray's a good umpire, but I think Ray's got to pull his head in.
I was broadcasting that game, so I didn't hear Ray's commentary of the proceedings. He was certainly influential at times yesterday.
He always is.
Ray's it? It was a great game of footy. Well, it wasn't a great game of footy. It was a great contest in the end. it was a crap game of footy for three quarters, and then it became exciting at the end.
Well, Geelong made it a crap game of football.
Yes, but Hawthorn's inability to play effective possession football was also one of the reasons it became a crap game of football.
Yeah, we'll talk to Jimmy about how it happened, because both of you were there yesterday. For me, I almost felt Geelong... It would have been in Geelong's best interest that they got beaten by trying to play that way. Because I think if they try and play that way against good teams, they're going to get beaten with the rule changes. They're trying to play the old way and almost buck the trend. I think they feel like they have the last few years at the MCG. They're worried about their lack of leg speed, so they've got to play that sort of way.
But Max Holmes was in yesterday. He was the champion, the sprint champion. Mitch Duncan was back in. He's a go-forward player. We'll talk about more with Jimmy, because it was a topic of conversation yesterday as well. Their style of play, because there's an SMS come through early doors saying that game yesterday proves... Where was that? Yes, the game yesterday proves the new rules don't make exciting footy. Coaches could have played fast footy if they wanted to. I just agree with that, just because that is the smallest of sample sizes. That's one game of the 27 that we've seen so far.
Yeah,
it's Geelong. It doesn't count.
I don't want to have this conversation really until Jimmy comes in. But I do think it's an interesting point that about what impact the rules are having and what is it. What impact is it that some of the coaches just want to be a little bit more proactive in the way that they play? Because I think it's a combination. Maybe the one makes the second one happen. I'm not sure. But we did see a game played yesterday which was similar to what we've seen a bit over the last couple of years.
Yes, we did. But I think, we'll talk more about it with Jim a little bit later on, because it's worthy of discussion,
yep.
I think.
Absolutely.
Now, just some housekeeping matters. Remo won the face-off again and got all 4 points, which is very, very distressing. Grace Fasale from Hobbs Crossing was the winner of the Friday face-off. In fact, it was a Thursday face-off. Well done to Grace, and well done to Remo. He's the perfect score, 12 from 3. It's never been done before on the Friday face-off, that points tally after 3 weeks. That's super impressive from our man. Very, very impressive.
We've actually got to reluctantly congratulate him.
Yeah. Well, the fact he's not here makes it easier. all of our certainties got up as well. Ramo and I got 6 tips. You and Boomer got 5. You are, in fact, trailing the tips at the moment. That's all I'll say.
We're one behind.
Well, trailing.
It's a congested leaderboard.
Yeah, bottom.
Well,
bottom
no, we just want to sort of just ease in, give you guys a bit of an opportunity.
You're
before.
Bottom of the bank.
Because a couple of other things I wanted to mention, Daniel.
Yes.
How good was it to see country footy back over the weekend? Easter weekend, when it comes to country footy, is one of the more significant weekends of the season. Often seasons are opened with Easter.
Yes.
I mean, Easter's always at a different time each year. But just to see all the teams back in action, the rivalries, all that sort of thing over the course of the weekend. You see the former AFL players going and playing at country teams all over the place. It was... great to see that happen, because it didn't happen last year. Metropolitan footy played a couple of games, a couple of teams play on Good Friday, but generally speaking, they'll start this weekend. But it was great that normalcy returning. And I do want to mention...
I was going to ask Andrew, by the way, from when he called in, Taranto got beaten by Rosebud.
Rosebud, yeah.
And then Red Hill beat Dramana, the premiers.
Yeah.
Late game, point was the ceiling point there for Red Hill in the Morning Peninsula, the Nepean Football League, the MPNFL. That's what it's called, isn't it?
There's been a few adjustments down there with the way they do things. But I also want to make the point of congratulating Sam Harper. Sam Harper has had a really tough run when you think of what's happened in his career. He's another athlete that's been plagued by concussions, but it's been a bit more serious than concussions. You might remember when he got belted in the head with a cricket bat,
yes,
keeping up to the stumps, and... was hospitalised for quite some time. It never looked like he was going to be able to play again. He got a chance to play this game against South Australia because his good mate Seb Gotch had busted a finger or hurt a finger, and he made his maiden first-class century yesterday. So I think that was one of the best stories of the weekend. And I also wanted to mention the women's international cricket team broke the record, this winning sequence.
They did.
Having beaten New Zealand the other day in the 50-over game. I think that was worth mentioning as well.
22 in a row for Meg Lanning and her girls. Well done to them. Record breakers, they are certainly the dominant force in women's international cricket. So well done to them. Still a couple of games in that series to go in the one-day series for the Rose Bowl against the Kiwis, of course, over there. I'm surprised it's taken you this long to reference Ash Barty's win in Miami.
Yes.
6-4, 4-0, and Bianca Andreescu ended up having to retire hurt, but was being outplayed significantly at the time.
Yep.
It was all over. But Ash Barty retains the number one spot on the list, on the rankings list. Naomi Osaka could have taken that spot had she got to the quarterfinals, but was sent packing a bit earlier than that. So it's a legitimate number one. It's not just a dodgy one, and she came out firing too.
Yeah, and I think it was significant from a number of reasons. One is she was able to defend a big title. It wasn't played last year, so she won it 2 years ago. And that was almost the event that signalled her arrival, I reckon, as a genuine number one player in the world potential. But I think the other thing too, Half, is that she's copping it a bit from the tennis press about being maybe a false number one and all those sorts of things because she didn't play last year when so many others did through that COVID time. So to actually go out there and win, there were a few key players that didn't play in Miami, but the reality is she still was able to win a big tournament. And I think the pressure of having to win to keep the number one title or the number one, whatever you want, the mantle, I think was of real significance. So, yeah, definitely worth mentioning over the weekend.
My word. And she's told him to go jam it, basically.
Yeah, she did, didn't she? Yeah. She got really on the... Because it's not like Ash to do that, but she got almost pressed to the point where she fired back, which is very uncharacteristic of her.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I am as well. Absolutely.
A bit of spunk, a bit of fight. So well done to Ash in the world of tennis, winning the Miami title. Well done to Edward Ware as well, who took out the stall gift yesterday, the 139th running of the stall gift in 12.19 seconds off a mark of 9.75. Now, that's a generous mark from our man, Edward.
He was.
Ed Ware, because he'd run it, well, he'd made the final twice before. He was second in 2011 by 1,000th of a second. And then fourth in 2016. So he's had fairly good history over a 10-year period. He must have run dead in the last couple of years to get his mark to 9.75. But he ended up taking out the title, and well done to him. And then backed it up and won the 200-metre final an hour later.
I didn't realise he did that.
And that's, of course, after winning the Fashions on the Field in 2019.
Right. That's right.
So he's taken just about all you can take out of stall. Well done to Ed Ware. Hayley Orman won her the women's edition of the gift. So well done to Hayley. I'm not sure if she'd been a previous entrant or not, but she won off, what'd she do, 13.88 off 9.75 as well. So 9.75 was the mark you needed at stall this Easter weekend.
Do you think in the confidential pages of the stall papers that when Edward Ware won the Fashions on the Field, that it was just would have been Fashion Ware with a picture of him in his sort of gear?
I don't know. Hayley, in fact, I'm just reading a bit further here, was a teacher. Been a teacher and turned into a cheese affineur. Do you know what a cheese affineur is? Or cheese ager.
Yeah.
My cheeses are sold Australia-wide, she said. So if you want to find more about Hayley's cheese, I'll just Google Hayley Orman and cheese, I reckon. She's probably celebrating today after a $40,000 check goes into the bank. But there you go. You can buy Hayley's cheese and be a
part of the cheese for $40,000.
Be a part of Stall Gift history by buying lots of cheese, if you wanted to do that. In the AFLW across the weekend, wins to the favoured teams. Melbourne defeating Fremantle was a good performance at Casey Fields. And then the Magpies, too good for the Kangaroos. So Freo and North are out of the AFLW finals race, which means the preliminary finals next week. Adelaide hosts Melbourne at the Adelaide Oval, and then Brisbane hosts Collingwood. That was a good game of footy, Brisbane and Collingwood, through the home and away rounds. That's at the Gabba. So both those games on Saturday. And the Pies have a staffing issue because they have a lot of crossover staff for the W and in the men's competition, and they're playing similar times or have got schedules that conflict, and they're trying to work out how they're going to manage that. So it'll be interesting to see how they play that in the Magpies.
Someone argue it's a good problem to have that your team's still involved at this time of year.
Well, that's true. That is very true. Time for the world-famous five-question Whitey Vlado Steakhouse Quiz. 1-300-652-927 is the number to call, and you can get yourself a lunch or dinner for two voucher valued at $210, if you don't mind. $210 just for beating Whitey. Doesn't sound that hard. That's up, what's up for grabs. Family business for nigh on 60 years at Vlado Steakhouse, Melbourne's own world-renowned Steakhouse. Take him on, 1-300-652-927. He tells me during the break, it's a fantastic quiz.
Well, it's an easy quiz.
A what? Well, you didn't say that.
I reckon we gave away at least three of the answers, or two of the answers, during our conversation in the first period of the program this morning. So if you're listening early, that'll give you a head start. 1-300-652-927 if you want to get involved this morning.
Do you think anyone will call?
Will be a bit harder today because I reckon it'll be a tradies day off today.
Oh, well, there was no traffic on the road.
There was no traffic on the roads.
I think it is an idea today.
School holidays. Well, there might be some room. So jump on 1-300-652-927. Paul from Frankston is opening the batting for us this morning. Good morning, Paul.
Morning. How are you going?
Going well, thank you.
That's all right.
Question.
Happy Easter.
Yeah, you too. Did you get plenty of chocolate?
Yeah, I got sacks.
Yeah, so did I.
What did
I think he said he got. I got stacks.
Oh, did you get?
I got stacks. Not and fat. Both.
Right. Okay.
Okay. All right. Question number one. Isaac Smith has moved obviously from Hawthorn to Geelong. He played against his old teammates yesterday. What number does he wear at Geelong? Having worn 16 at Hawthorn, what number is he wearing at Geelong?
Is it 7?
Very good start. Correct.
Yeah, good start.
Correct.
That might be the tough one, actually.
Which Victorian made an unbeaten century in the Sheffield Shield yesterday, and what was his first Shield game for the entire season?
Sam Harper.
Very good. Very good.
Not sure about this system. Not sure.
What?
No, it's good. Keep going.
Question number three is the famous voice. Have a listen.
It's just been, you know, it's been a road that's had a lot of tough days.
Who was that who's been in the news over the last few days?
Is it Jordan Spieth?
Very good, Paul.
Has anyone ever run
Excellent.
The board?
No, no one has.
No one's ever run the
Not
board.
Not in the Vlados Super Quiz or whatever it's called.
The Vlados 5-question world famous morning yep. Super Quiz.
I think you can do it here, yeah. Paul. I reckon All you'll right. get the last two.
Are you feeling
have, you been, have you ever been to Vlados before?
No, I haven't, but I'm desperate for it because I want to take the sheriff there and I'll impress her, so I'll be stoked if I can get
the
it.
Okay.
Well, we're cheering for you.
Right.
Are you feeling a bit more nervous now, though? You're getting to the end.
Yeah, I'm pulling bricks, literally.
Who won yesterday's stall gift?
You said his name, and he's wear. Some, and you said fashion wear. That was a great headline. Ethan Ware? Was it Ethan Ware?
Oh, I'm going to give it to you. I'll give it to you.
Oh, wow!
I'll give it to you.
Unbelievable!
It's E-Ware, I think you said.
He said E. Ware, yes.
Yeah, E. Ware.
Edward Ware. Not Ethan Ware, but we'll give it to you.
Oh, gee, this is controversial. There's a whole board of callers just cursing you at the moment, Whitey.
Well, just the fact that he's... There's a lot at stake here.
No one's ever run the
Pardon
board.
The pun.
Oh, I like what you did there. There's a lot at stake.
Intentional.
Nice.
All right. Do you like your golf, Paul?
Yeah, I did actually play yesterday at Mount Martha, but I'm not very good at it.
All right, okay.
Boy.
From Georgia in the United States of America, I won the 1987 US Masters when I chipped in on the second playoff hole to defeat Greg Norman.
Oh.
Who am I?
This
for the prize.
Is there a hint?
Not really.
it's a difficult.
I gave you sort of the answer to the last one.
Okay. Yeah, he did. No, he did.
He chipped in. It was the 11th hole. He hit his second shot right, and he chipped in with Norman on the edge of the green.
It's actually basically impossible to play that shot and get it anywhere near the hole, let alone put it in.
Pretty couples. No,
look, it's a good suggestion. It's a good answer. That era, perfect answer for the era. If you don't know, you don't know this one. You're not going to get it.
Bad luck, Paul.
Oh, Paulie.
Getting so close.
What's the sheriff going to do for dinner now?
Try again tomorrow. Craig from Camberwell. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, Whitey and Harp.
Morning, Craig.
This is just, it's almost like a gimme type situation.
It's a tap in.
Who was it?
Damn right it is.
Who was it that chipped in 1987 on the second playoff hole to defeat Greg Norman?
That would be Larry Mize.
It is Larry Mize.
Well done.
That's the way the game plays. Craig just sat back, just smoking the pipe, just waiting for the run.
Got to the clock tower. the field opened up at Craig Wooshka down the middle of the straight there at headquarters and got the chocolates. Well, not the chocolates, the steak, the Flato steak worth $210. That's the voucher he wins for lunch or dinner for two at Flato Steakhouse, Melbourne's own world-renowned steakhouse, a family business for nigh on 60 years. Well done, Craig. I remember that morning vividly. I remember having my heart broken that morning and not recovering for quite some time. Quite some time. We're up early because it's all you had to do on the Monday. And it was the playoff.
Who was in the playoff?
Greg and Larry.
And there was another one.
Was there?
There was another player that was out after the first hole. So that was the second playoff hole.
Oh, I don't remember
that. They played 10 and someone missed about a 6-8 foot putt to stay in.
Oh, God.
And it was because Larry Myers had the putt to win, and it was an uphill putt right to left.
Ben Crenshaw also.
No, he was thereabouts.
He,
he was. He was thereabouts. He just missed, actually. And so Larry misses the putt, and everyone starts scurrying to the next playoff hole to get the vantage point.
Yeah.
But both this player and Greg Norman still had putts to make to keep the playoff going. So Greg's was about a 4-foot putt, which... he had to wait until after Seve Ballesteros.
Severino.
Yeah, he had a putt, and he missed his putt with just all this noise going on, and then Greg put his in, and then, yeah. I mean, it was terribly unlucky for a number of reasons. Because of where Larry hit his second shot, Norman hit after Larry. So Norman played very conservatively away from the water, thinking, well, I don't want to give myself, you know, some issues here because where Larry is, he's not going to get up and down. So I've just got to get it on the green, I'll make my two putts and I'll win. And the year before, he lost the PGA Championship when Bob Tway holed his bunker shot.
He had a stretch there, Royal Shark. He had a stretch. Now, that was a most distressing morning, I must admit, watching Larry Myers chip that ball in. Oh, I haven't recovered from that, I don't think, really. That's why Adam Scott winning was so important.
Yeah, absolutely.
To get one back, for the Aussies. But that Masters Week is a great week, and some of the footage coming out from Augusta on their socials is enticing for a great weekend or a great week. Looking forward to chatting to Leash about it a little bit later on through the week, and, of course, Ian Baker Finch, who's going to join us on Thursday for preparations.
And we should give a plug also to Fox Sports because they have got the Masters channel this week. So it's just fantastic. You just sit there and watch all the old, all the old coverage, and brings back so many good and bad memories, I think, of over the years, because there has been so much heartbreak. I mean, even in recent times, you kind of forget that Jason Day had the lead with a few holes to play.
Yes.
And just completely bottled it late. Just got too excited and it just looked like he wasn't going to lose from there. Adam Scott also had heartbreak. He's won, but he's also almost won a couple of other times. And then the famous one of Greg Norman and Nick Faldo. So,
There's no need to mention that.
Yeah, there's plenty of those from an Australian perspective.
Did you know Greg's coming home?
Yes, he is.
Australia, and he's winding down his businesses. He's stopped being materialistic. Ego is getting in the way for Greg. He's going to wind down from 13 to 14 to 5 or 6. And he said, who needs another million? That's what he said. That's what he said. One of the quotes yesterday in the paper from a podcast I think he was talking on. Who needs another million? You know, just be happy with what you've got. You don't need another million. You're probably right, Greg. You probably don't need another million. But he wants to be Greg Normal. Not Greg Norman. Greg Normal. That was a good headline yesterday. Looking forward to seeing we'll have to get him on the show. Because he'd be happy to talk golf. He's making contact. What I like about Greg at the moment, certainly what we're seeing, and maybe he's been doing this for years behind the scenes that we just haven't had access to, but he seems to be embracing the Aussie contingent out there on tour and FaceTiming them a lot and talking to them and giving them some feedback and perspective and some conversation, I suppose, from someone who's been there and done that.
Well, it's all because of Holy Moly. He's become part of Australia again with that.
Is that still going?
It's not. But he had such a prominent role in Holy Moly.
What did he do?
He sat on a leather chair telling really bad jokes.
Was that his role?
Yeah, it was a very odd situation.
There's a reason I don't watch those shows. Great to see across the desk for the first time in a long time the very physical being that is the massive man of the captain of the Melbourne Football Club, Max Gorn. Good morning, Max.
Morning, Half. Morning, Whitey. I'm back.
Yeah, how exciting is this?
He's in studio.
When's Isaac coming in?
That's a good question.
I've got to speak to him.
He was actually coming in today.
We tried to get into D's, and he pulled out late. I need to have a chat.
Yeah. Did you?
We need to sit down and talk, me and Isaac.
It's because you didn't have the avocado on the waffle.
It must have been.
He's an avocado man.
He actually said he'd come in today, but I said, Max is coming in. So.
Yeah. Well, sorry, Isaac. no, I sort of got lost on the way here. It's been a while.
I know. It's been 2 years. Yeah. Well, year and a half.
Yeah, 18 months, I reckon.
You think of how many times we've spoken to you on a little Zoom screen and all of a sudden you're here.
Very high tech. You've got to open about 7 apps to get on.
It does take a long time to get through to that window, that little portal where we can see you down the line. But it's lovely to have you in the studio, Max, particularly after a weekend like you had for the D's. Fairly significant impact in the game you had, Max. 2 goals.
Yeah.
2 big snags, if you don't mind.
Was able to go forward a little bit. It's funny that before all 3 games, I've played 3 different roles in all 3. And as the first bounce goes, I'm presuming I'm playing full ruck the whole game. And it sort of changes within the game. And I'm glad I'm able to do that in my own football. And I'm glad Goody's got faith in me to move me around wherever he feels like he needs me at times. And sometimes it's the other way around. Sometimes they need Jacko in the middle and need me to get out. So, I'm going into Geelong this week thinking I'm playing full ruck again. But who knows, I could swing forward. We're still missing a couple of tall forwards that... I think they're playing their first VFL game this week, both of them, Weedham and M Brown, so they'll have a nice little challenge to see which one we end up picking. We could pick both.
I just worked out he lives around the corner from me, Sam Wiedemann.
Sam Wiedemann, he dropped, Camberwell.
Yeah.
Yes.
He dropped a... I was walking the dogs one day, and he dropped a jar of tomato paste, from a bolognese type situation. And the back of the car smashed it on the road. He's sitting there cleaning up the poor fella.
Oh, no.
He was copying some grief from his partner at the time, too.
He's gone full meat diet. So interesting, he had paste.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
So he's gone full... Everyone's gone anti-meat. Yeah. He's gone full meat.
He's gone full meat diet and looks good.
Does he?
Yeah.
He's always a handsome man.
What does full meat diet mean? This is interesting.
Yeah, I don't want...
Listen to you. You piped up.
It's a porterhouse for breakfast.
Very interesting. I'm interested in that thing about the role you play. Who makes the decision to change it on the run? Is that you sensing something out on the ground? Is it Goody? Is it a combination of both? How does it unfold as the game unfolds?
Well, there's so many different aspects of my role that I can play, and the first part and the most important part is what I do with the ball in the ruck and be able to win a clearance. And if we're potentially down clearances or we just need a new look in there, then the option is to bring Jacko in or move track to the goal square and bring Tommy Sparrow in or something like that. That can change and get some variety in. Then there's also the other option if we're not there intercept marking down back, which they were at the start of the game, there's a chance for me to go forward and provide a bit more of a contest. And then there's also, like we saw against St Kilda that time, where I was able to sit back in the D50 and that's and some aerial help and being able to help Stevie and Jake. So there's some different aspects, but the most important part of a ruck role is to make sure we're getting clearances, and that's what I'm thinking of going out. And if it's not working, then we can change things up.
So have you practiced that a lot in the summer, particularly going forward? It's something that you've done at times, but this seems to be a conscious change that you might spend a fair bit more time forward.
Yeah, it's still... Luke Jackson's our forward and I'm our ruck at training, and throughout pre-season, that's what we did. I've had little times where I've gone forward in pre-season training, but not too much. It's still, I mean, if we looked at numbers, I reckon I would have rucked 70% on the weekend, but against Saints, it would have been about 95%. So there's still games where I'm playing pretty much the whole game in the ruck. Still got to do some goal-kicking practice. In fact, I've kicked them all straight all pre-season, and the first one I hook is game day and I hit the post.
I didn't notice that.
At least you know that they're all going the same way.
Yeah, well, I had a few texts just saying just start it out right, but if I do that, it stays right for some reason. I was disappointed at that first shot. I've bounced back. I kicked two from there, but... I enjoy going forward. My love is ruck, and my love's clearance wins, and I love being around Clayton, Christian, Jack, and some of these new boys, and Jimmy Jordan, and Tommy Sparrow as well.
Well, 24 disposals, not just rucking. You were getting a fair bit of footy too. 24, you had 28 hitouts, I think it was, the 2 snags. It was a fairly significant impact. It was a bit of a tight battle too. The first half particularly, before they lost a few soldiers, when you overran them late, because with your quality and your play, it was pretty tight. Were you a bit nervous at halftime?
Not nervous. We haven't been nervous really yet, which is a sign of maturity, because in all 3 games, teams have had run-ons, including, I think Saints kicked 6 unanswered goals against us at one point at the end of the first and the start of the second. And
I did.
The maturity coming in our group is no one is really getting too nervous. We know how we can get back into the game, and we stick to that, which is a sign of maturity for our group.
So is that the difference to the start to the year for this group, for this edition of the D's?
There's a lot of difference. No doubt in years gone by, we potentially would have dropped one of these games. And so the maturity probably is one thing. Every game we're going out there at the moment, we're just trying to build respect and trying to change the perception around Melbourne Football Club and being able to compete for longer and being in every game. And what better challenge this week against the grand finalists from last year? So, we were a little bit nervous. We weren't nervous, but when I think it was 5-2 quarter time.
Yes, it was.
Yep. Yeah, and Toby, to be fair, Toby Green kicked two of them from the boundary, and Maisie and Jake were probably a little bit off in their own reports, and they got back to what their best football was in the second and third quarter. Jake Lever ended up having a brilliant game, and we were able to turn it around, and then the third and fourth quarter we knew, especially with a couple of injuries to GWS, if we just keep going the way we're going, we should be able to run over them. Although they did kick two centre-bounce goals to start the fourth, which was slightly scary.
Well, it got to within a goal. Yes. Toby's kicked two, and he was the only one that was going to break the game for them, and he thought about doing it, which was, I'm sure, a bit nerve-wracking. But they kicked the first two, and it was within a goal. That was the most impressive part from my perspective, watching your performance as a team. You're able to just absorb that and say, right, I no dramas, that's okay, and we'll go about our business from there, and dominated to win by 34 points in the end.
Credit to Toby, because he did it on Steve, and Steve, in my biased opinion, is probably one of the better fullbacks going around at the moment, and he goes from playing on Tabernard to King to Toby Green, and he'll probably go to Hawkins this week, so it's just the versatility that Steve has. But he did it on Steve, and it was slightly worrying in that last quarter, but we're able to peg it back, and Keziah Pickett was able to turn it on for us a little bit in the last quarter.
Keziah is creating some news, Max. Everyone's falling in love with this dynamic little man who does some great things, particularly inside the forward 50. His energy is fantastic. I saw him last week against St Kilda live, and he was awesome. And his ability to impact the contest and go through contest at speed, be clean, and then execute is quite remarkable. He's making a big difference to your forward craft.
I've seen a lot of small forwards come in, and there's still some guys that are around the club, like Alex Neil-Bullen and Charlie Spargo, but Keziah ticks both boxes that small forwards try to have, and it's been extremely fit and ruthless in their defensive and getting up the ground to help out our structure, and then also having so much class around the goals. You rarely find someone that's got both those ticks. He's the three of them combined, in Keziah, Alex Neil-Bullen and Charlie Spargo, have... our small forward role used to be the most rotated position, one in, one out each week. And I feel for the guys that aren't in the team at the moment, but the three guys that are playing some seriously good footy. And Charlie and Alex bring out the best in Keziah, and Keziah brings out the best in those two.
So what we do this year is put some questions and opportunities to our fans, our listeners, at RSN927 on the socials, through Twitter and Instagram. And Matt wants to know a bit more about Cozzy. How does he do? The question is actually written like this. How does Cozzy do the things that Cozzy does? How does he do it? Is it just natural? Has he practiced a heap of that stuff? Or what have you seen from him? How does he get to this point?
He's got a genuine work ethic at training. That's good. So I must say a lot of it is natural. And you don't want to ever get that out of his game. But he puts in a lot of work at training, and like I said, he's incredibly fit. He plays a lot of midfield time. He starts in a lot of centre bounces for us.
I like that dynamic.
It brings something new to the Melbourne midfield. We've got a lot of big guys in there, but to be able to have Cozzy in there and sort of buzz around, he's quite funny in our centre bounce meetings. He doesn't really give much. just sort of says, where's the ball not going? And I'll sort of take out that guy. But yeah, his work ethic would be the answer to Matt's question there.
Thank you, Matt.
Has he surprised you in what he's been able to do? Because he did have an unusual preseason. He had some family issues or something like that. There he was away from the club for a long time. He was training interstate. Then he sort of burst onto the scene the way he has. Tell us a little bit more about that and the what you think of what he's been able to do.
Yeah, it shows his character. It's a close death to him, and to be able to sort of control what he can control. And he's actually, I might get it in my pre-season next year, but he was able to have a month off just before the season started and do F45 every day and then be able to be as fit as he's ever been. So maybe F45, that's a plug for their company.
It is,
but
a big plug.
Maybe that's the way to go. But he was 6 a.m. every morning in Adelaide. He did an F45 and sent a photo to our WhatsApp. And it was quite inspirational, to be honest. He was going through a lot over there with his family, and he knew he had to be there to support some of his siblings and cousins and whatnot, and to be able to keep training. He trained with the Woodville West Torrens. Jimmy Tumpus says he was training well, which
Jimmy
is good.
Jimmy Tumpus.
And yeah, he came back and he showed that he didn't need to play a practice game. He could just come in and play round one, and first three games have been pretty good.
Ball up, Stanley doesn't want it to come.
They did, the closing stages, thanks to Channel 7 yesterday of the game at the MCG, Geelong and Hawthorne, Easter Monday rivals, and they put up another good show yesterday in front of 50,000 people at the Mecca. And we'll talk about that as part of the Tuesday footy review. Jimmy Bartel is about to join us, the triple premiership player with the Cats, Brownlow medalist Norm Smith medalist, and boy, God, he's handsome. Jim, good morning.
Morning, Half. Morning, Waddy. How are we?
We're well. How was your Easter weekend?
It was good. Lots of chocolate.
Who's the worst Easter egg finder in the history of mankind?
The little Hurricane Henley. Clown Hands is all over it. He cleaned them up early, went the big ones, left the little ones for his younger brother, and he's officially the worst Easter egg finder in the history. Of course, I love him to
bits. Lack of awareness.
No, he just anything within a, like myself, anything a foot around him, he just doesn't see it. He was actually literally standing on an Easter egg and goes, I can't find any. Here's one under your foot, son. and then just grunts at you like all boys are.
He's a simple being. Just one step in front of the other for that little fella at the moment. Mm. But he's going to miss out on a lot of eggs if he can't find them in those situations.
They're under your feet.
You should be able to find
them. How do you not
them.
Feel that?
Good question.
Mm. Now, I'm going to throw straight to you about Geelong yesterday.
Yes.
Remembering we've got Isaac Smith coming up after 8.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. But just one for you before we speak to Isaac around the way Geelong played yesterday. It felt very similar to the way Geelong played Melbourne early last year at the MCG. To me, watching it on television, you were at the game, as was Half, the slowness of ball movement. Mm. Is this because they're worried if they go quick they'll get beaten, or is it more about that's just the way they play? And we talk about this a lot, I know, but the game is changing.
Oh, definitely.
But Geelong doesn't seem to be changing.
No, there's a fair bit of that, Whitey, and I think a couple of points, it's a bit from each of those couple of points you made, and I think they're actually trying to play quicker, and that's through a personnel shift as well. When you pick Holmes on debut, he's quick and he plays outside. Isaac, who we'll talk about, great uncontested link-up running player. He helps that balance. They're playing Jordan Clark more, which I'd been screaming out for 18 months, even though he was a first, second-year player. But just naturally, the way he plays is a point of difference. Even Higgins, he can get on the outside. I know they're experienced players, but they naturally get you on the outside and move the game forward. Atkins going back adds a small defender who likes to move the game forward. But I think it takes a little while to shift from what has been a successful habit for them. And the natural way to fall back is to fall back with what works. And that's what you're talking about, is that slower ball movement, possession game style. But the Hawks didn't allow them to play quick. They're live. The Hawks got really quickly back into the corridor, and the Cats got a lot of width. And so the Cats just took what was available. Now, my issue with the Cats was they kept playing that way all the way down the ground, and they just kept slow possession. And on paper, and we know games aren't played on paper, they had the advantage forward of the ball, but they weren't going to kick into a contest. And a couple of goals they got late, which were enough to prove, you know, the match winners, the couple from Henry and the one from Pafit. It wasn't perfect football. It was take the contest on, win the contest forward. Now, I would have liked them to pull the trigger a bit more once they got 70 metres out, which helps your ball movement and your speed. But Geelong, and we talk about this with different clubs, we talk about, especially with Port Adelaide, they think their best defence comes off their attack. Geelong is clearly, and it's always been Chris Scott's philosophy, and it's been a successful one without winning a premiership, but it's been a successful one of defence helps our attack. And they set up that way. You know, look at the way they structure up and they played the game.
Yeah. Half, what did you think watching it live? Because some of the Geelong players in interviews after the game did say, we want to go quicker. but it was a lot of what we saw from them last year.
Yeah, I just think it's so ingrained in them to play at that tempo more often than not that it's difficult for them to break out of that. And despite the fact that there are seemingly more opportunities through some of the rule adjustments this season, it's just difficult for them to do it. It's not natural. It's not habit. But I think with the integration of, I particularly think Clark and Holmes going forward, they'll have players who just naturally do that anyway, and that might start to filter through and become a bit more of a pattern of their system of moving the ball from back to forward. Because I think they'll need to, because what they do, Jim, and what we found out yesterday watching that game was that they kept Hawthorn in the game by not impacting the scoreboard themselves.
Yep.
They controlled the game for three quarters. Effectively did whatever they wanted to do for three quarters. So they controlled the game, kept Hawthorn at bay at arm's length for often enough, but they didn't hit the scoreboard. So with any level of momentum, which we saw Hawthorn have in the last quarter, they're in the game. And then all of a sudden things get really tight and Geelong defenders one-on-one panicked a few times and they cuffed up a few opportunities. So that's my concern. With the Cats.
And the other way that you can do it, and this is just my two cents worth, and Geelong people, you know, inside the four walls, those famous words would go, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, Jim.
Yeah, you don't know. But if you're going to play Blitzarves back, I reckon then you can put Blitzarves as your anchor defender because he can cover so much space and he's such a good mark and he can cover talls and smalls. Being the anchor defender, it's good like that. And then you can move Tom Stewart up higher, which I think is a very attacking weapon because he's a good kick of the footy, he's got some speed himself, and he's one who likes to take the game on. But if he's always the anchor, which he's been so successful at, and I'm talking about a dual All-Australian, but you can actually get some more punch out of his play if he is not always the anchor defender. So if Tom Stewart's getting the ball up near the logos, I think that's a dangerous option.
Yep. I would agree with that.
Yeah. So just a bit of structural stuff, I think, for him.
It's really going to be interesting this game next Sunday against Melbourne because I think if Geelong plays like it did yesterday, Melbourne will get them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
A lot of teams would have beaten Geelong yesterday, but it is Geelong and you've got to respect them. And they'll get better with players coming back, but I just thought yesterday was very interesting.
Well, Hawthorn had their chances.
Yeah, they did.
Certainly that last quarter, they just butchered opportunities and decisions and execution.
And that's where they're at.
Yeah, that's where they are.
They've got to be given credit for fighting the way they did because they did a lot wrong but still found themselves in the game. Yeah. I'm not sure whether that says more about Hawthorn or more about Geelong.
Yeah, if you're Alistair Clarkson and Hawthorn supporters, you should be very pleased at what they did and they got beaten on decision-making, their own decision-making, and a couple of structural points forward of the ball. So Half and I were sitting next to each other when they actually won possession and CJ was blasting off half back and Impey and things like that. Every single player lengthened. So for people who don't know that term, it means everyone's getting back to the goal square. You're trying to create all this space between your midfield and half back and your forwards. But every one of them did it. So the amount of times that there was actually, you still need that one player coming up at you to be that link in the chain. Then you can make the decision and allows your defence to get up and defend high.
So of all the games you both saw over the weekend, who was the one standout performer for you? Because there were some good performances over the weekend.
Sydney. I was live at I was live at the Swans.
Hard not to love Sydney.
So is this sustainable or is this a young team that's forward in their preparation and it won't stay that way? When does it become believable?
It's believable and they don't need me to show up live to get that affirmation. But what I took away from the Swans games, and you're talking about the game changing, is defenders who can defend one-on-one are worth their weight in gold. And now we know the way Sydney train their players up, they do it every single player that comes through their system, they can turn rookie list players into all Australians, is they teach them how to defend and defend closely one-on-one. Now, the player that sticks out in my head is Trent Cotchin wins a stoppage, comes through almost breaking 50, and he looks to hit up the Richmond player, but Jordan Dawson's right up the backside of the Richmond player. Turnover, and it's that goal that they got all the way down the Southern Stand wing, and there was knock-ons, and McLean knocked it on, and things like that. But it comes off the back of defending first and then attacking. So I think their defensive methods and the way they train their players actually really suits 2021 football.
Oh, I agree. And they've scored 100 points every week. 117 every week, minimum. They're the highest scoring team in footy, which I think David King said the other night on Fox. If you had said that after three rounds at the start of the season, you would have said that Steve Hawkins ruined the game.
Yeah, that's right.
The 45 points a game.
They scored 80 points off turnover, and they kicked five goals from their back 50 turnovers.
But I mean, this is
which is remarkable.
But it's so un-Sydney-like. It's so un-John Longmire-like that they are playing the way they are. We saw signs last year that they were going to be okay, even though they finished bottom four. We've always thought that their kids were going to be okay. But how has it happened so quickly?
Well, again, it's a personnel thing as well. So Mills going into the midfield, the young players are actually playing key roles, and their instinct is to play the game aggressively. But as I was saying, they've got all the bedrock or foundation to stop the opposition first, and then they're catching them out on transition with a bit of creativity now forward of the ball.
We go through their kids, and did we touch on this with John Longmire last week?
Yeah, we did.
I mean, they're having an extraordinary impact on them at the moment. So energy, enthusiasm, and raw talent. Like, these kids got some serious talent.
Yeah.
We talk about other teams and their young players, but Sydney never sort of get a mention until in the last couple of weeks on the back of what they've done. But Wicks and Warner and Goulden.
The Chad.
And throw in Blakey because he's still a kid.
McInerney,
McDonald. Like, they've got some real talent. So when you've got players that can actually really play the game, it does allow you to free up your style a bit. And then you've got the adjustments on top of that. It just becomes this perfect storm. So whether or not it's sustainable, we'll find out, because they are a relatively young bunch. Certainly the ones playing at the moment, the Sydney Swans. So history says that's difficult to maintain.
That's right, Harv. And we spoke about this last week about Gold Coast having these great starts and then they sort of fall away. But the difference is they've still got Kennedy, Parker, Rampy, Franklin. Heaney's almost through that young stage. He's just a bona fide
Mills
star.
As well,
So it's just, I can't remember a team. I mean, again, we're only three games in, but Lloyd. But I can't remember a team making such a dramatic difference and having such a dramatic impact, considering that two of their wins have been Richmond at the MCG and Brisbane at the Gabba.
Yep.
I mean, this isn't just beating Gold Coast, North Melbourne and Essendon. This is serious.
And the scoreboard flattered.
Yes, it did.
Richmond in the end.
They had seven players playing their first game at the MCG on the weekend.
Are they the real deal? 1-300-652-927. Swans fans, South Melbourne fans, footy fans, let us know. Because the next four, what about this? They've got Essendon at the SCG this week. That's a very, very winnable game, Jim. GWS at the SCG, that, unfortunately for you, is a very winnable game. Not Giants, but for Sydney. Gold Coast at Metricon, and then Geelong at the SCG. So the next four, that could be 7-0.
Yeah.
Now, I'm jumping ahead of ourselves here, but
that's
a good stretch of games to have in front of you in 3-0.
So the other team I wanted to just put forward to you, Jimmy, was what West Coast did on Saturday night, because, West Coast and Port Adelaide kind of off-Broadway in some respects, but two teams that played off in the finals last year. I'm just interested in your thoughts on West Coast. Are the new rules helping West Coast, because if they do move it quicker with the forward line they've got, that they're a team we always know that can score 100 points quite comfortably?
Yeah, I think it emphasises their clear strength across the competition, which is the old-fashioned term, down the spine.
Yeah.
When you look at it, they're genuine key position players. Now, there's sides that say, oh, yeah, we've got a key back, but they're 191 centimetres. All of these guys are nearly 200 centimetres, and they're very good aerially. You can have big blokes who aren't good aerially, and they're good on the lead, and they can spoil, but they all mark the football. Like, Barass McGovern, Natanui, and then they throw in sometimes the second ruck, whether it be Vardy. Oscar Allen can be the second ruck and forward, and then, of course, Kennedy and Darling. But they all work so well together. So Kennedy, Darling, and Oscar Allen, can you ever remember them jumping into each other?
No. They're very well organised.
They're well organised. They've got height, and they can mark the football, and they've got a clear strength. And I think we're all seeing each week, Liam Ryan isn't just the sizzle highlight.
No, exactly right.
He's the steak and sizzle. Yep. As we always say, he's a legitimate top 20 player in the competition. Like, he's dangerous. Everything in his area, happens. He is awesome. And he had the best post-match interview about, I'm not just going to stand around, I'm going to jump on their heads. I thought, that's excellent. That's what we want to see. But I think what it's doing, Whitey, to answer your questions, I think it's just really franking their strength.
We made the deliberate choice not to run away from it. I think one approach in the preparation for the game would be to say, look, it's just another game. We've just got to focus in on it. But it wasn't another game for Isaac Smith. And I don't normally divulge these things. And it's certainly I don't want anyone to feel sorry for him, but, you know, he only just made it to the line. He was ill in the last couple of days, and that kind of added to the pressure a little bit for him. And he couldn't come to training yesterday. He was still pretty cooked yesterday. It depended a little bit on how he pulled up. And I just stop asking. But if I get a call saying he's out, we've got the contingency ready to go. And if I hear nothing, I assume no news is good news. So I just...
Under the weather was our man Isaac Smith. That was Chris Scott talking post-game about his build-up to the clash against his old club for the first time yesterday. 5 points to the good of the Cats was the end result. 15 disposals for Isaac, and maybe a little bit of a tummy bug through the week as well. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Isaac.
Morning, Arf. How are you?
Going very well. What's happened? What was wrong with you?
Oh, no. We just, as a family, got struck down by a bit of gastro Saturday, Sunday, so... stuck on the couch for a few hours and feeling pretty ordinary, but got to the game and got to the line, which was good, and we ended up getting the win.
Isaac would have made you nice and light to run up and down the MCG wing.
I think I was nice and light, Jimmy, but I had absolutely bloody no energy to run up and down the wing. So, it was, as a footballer, sometimes you just got to rock up, show up and do your role. So I started the game and... all's fair and equal, and we're probably lucky to get the win in the end. Hawthorn came back and gave it a bloody good shake.
So was there a genuine chance you weren't going to play, or you're always confident you get over the line?
No, it was pretty 50-50, Whitey. Got some fluids and not much food in. I probably didn't eat much since Saturday morning, but got some fluids in and felt okay before the game and got out there and just tried to help the side. But not an ideal preparation, but you don't always get that in footy. But, as I said, it was a good game of footy and, win or lose, it was just good to get out there and get it done.
Did you feel, Chris Scott spoke about it after the game in that little grab we played, did you feel a burden to be out there and play because of the pressure, because it was Hawthorn? Had it been the Giants or the Port Adelaide, you would have been much more comfortable saying, oh, I'm a bit crook today?
Probably. I felt like I pretty much didn't have an option not to run out there. it had been built up for a few months, and it's always a great clash as well, Easter Monday, and the games you want to play in. So, I thought, a little option, but that's all right. Sometimes you got to do that in life.
True.
Were you anxious at all, Isaac?
Not particularly. It was probably handy being a bit crook Saturday, Sunday. I didn't really think about it too much. I was sort of thinking about trying to be a bit better. But, I guess, probably not anxious was the word. It was just a bit of a surreal and different feeling running out, and all the Hawks players were already out there. And not just that. All the fitness staff, all the volunteers that are out on the oval, and then sitting next to them when you're on the bench during the game, and people that you spend a third of your life with. It's just a different feeling.
Your role in the team, and much has been made at how good Geelong have been defensively, and we've spoken about on here a lot. Your role and what Chris Scott wants you to do, is it to provide, I guess, some more attacking flair?
I guess you can say that a little bit, Jimmy. I guess... Geelong got a pretty strong style of football, which they want to play, and they've been doing it well for so many years. You could say myself, Sean Higgins, Jeremy Cameron, probably our offensive ability is a lot better than our defensive ability, so we'll try and bring that to the game more often than not.
What was said out there? Because there was a lot of conjecture that... that they'd get into you or you'd get into them. It seemed like they almost were trying to ignore you out on the field. I don't know what it was like playing it, but they kind of stayed away from you.
Yeah, Whitey, I got more of the silent treatment than lots of words.
Fair enough, too.
Yeah, I did get a little bit out of Blake Hardwick. I think they'd all been told not to speak to me, but when I was standing next to him, he couldn't help himself. they were all pretty quiet. I guess the surprising thing when you're out there is... it goes so quickly and there's so much going on in the game that you actually don't get too many opportunities to, say, stop and take stock of what's going on. It seemed pretty difficult, and a few of my best mates were out there, and it felt like we didn't even cross paths after we had dinner after the game. We were chatting about it, and it was like we hardly saw each other.
There's a moment where you tackled Luke And you kind of, it was almost like one of the back tail. I don't know what you were trying to do, but you sort of went to the ground. I thought, oh, here you go. There's going to be something going on here. Nothing. Not one thing.
Oh, a couple of little words, Whitey.
Just a couple of sneaky little ones. So there was a post-game catch-up, was there, with the old crew?
Yeah, it wasn't very eventful, though, Half. Candice and I were pretty under the weather, so it was only sort of a quick high and by. But, yeah, there was five or six of us, which was nice just to catch up and have a bit of a yarn about the game. But we probably talked about footy for 5 minutes and then we're off on another journey.
If you go infecting the Hawks with the cat drive, they'll be hell to pay. Don't worry about that.
The Trojan horse. Get him in there. Is the build-up different? You've been on both sides. Obviously, my time at Geelong, and you've probably experienced, they embrace the day, the Easter Monday clash, and it's almost a responsibility. Is it different?
Not really. Probably what surprised me in the build-up, Jimmy, was not that anything was different, but how much Geelong knew of Hawthorn, and sitting back and listening to them during the week and how we wanted to go about the game and how we wanted to break down Hawthorn. It's funny, because we played Geelong so many times and in so many big games, it felt like they probably knew us better than we knew ourselves when you're sitting in a Hawks meeting, which probably surprised me a little bit. And when I come to think of it, we probably, sitting back, probably knew a hell of a lot about Geelong and things that they probably didn't even know as well. So that's probably what surprised me during the week.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.